Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Whew, I feel like Diane. It's, gosh, you look gorgeous from up here. It's really awesome. There is a lot of people here tonight. And I don't know how you feel, but I feel like I am just absolutely the most blessed human being in this room. I feel so totally loved. I got greeted at the airport today with a great big sunflower from Diane, and that was great, and she told me she washed her car and she couldn't even recognize it. And then we went to a fabulous dinner, and Sally and Albert are here, and Sally is someone who is super special in my life, and Albert too, but really Sally. Because I'm also a grateful member of Al-Anon, and Sally does a lot of direction with me in that area, and I'm really grateful to be sharing this weekend with her and Albert. This is really special. And then we went to a fabulous dinner, and they served us a great big prime rib. Thank you so much, Bill. And a great big fruit basket, and it's like, wow. And I walked in here, and I've had the privilege of coming to Kansas before, except it was in Wichita. And I just turned around, and there were some friends from Wichita. And that's real special. And, you know, it's like God willing and the creek don't rise. I'll be 15 years sober on April the 11th.
Yes.
And And you know, 15 years ago, people were not doing nice things for me, and certainly nobody would have driven 200 miles to see me. And, you know, and that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the really neat thing is when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't love nor could I feel love. And tonight, my heart is so full of love. And the real miracle is that I can feel it. And for that, I am so grateful. I am so grateful today that I can give and feel love. And those were the things that I couldn't do when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm just really grateful for that. And thank you so much for having me. I'd kind of like to tell you a little bit about what's happening right now, because I'm kind of one of these long-winded kind of get rolling kind of people, and maybe I'll forget to tell you what it's like today before I run out of time. And so I'd kind of like to tell you what's going on today. And my life is so good today, and one of the things that I believe with all my heart is that we grow through pain. And I have had a little of that. I've got a few growing areas that are happening right now. And one of them is that my oldest son has moved to California. And I'm telling you, it's taken every day of my almost 15 years to handle this. And Russ has been living in New Jersey, and Russ was, it was a big heartache for me, because Russ was, is one of our Al-Anon members, and he didn't use chemicals, and the disease of alcoholism, the effects of the disease of alcoholism, Russ nearly died from that. And today he and I are having the opportunity to do some healing. And you know, when he was a little boy, I wasn't present, and I could never hear his pain. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, today I can sit with the help of a therapist and hear his pain. And I'm not going to tell you that's a lot of fun, but I'm really grateful that I'm getting the opportunity. The other is that, I don't know, somewhere along the way, I just started to accumulate some tapes. You know, I get the opportunity to come to these conferences from time to time, and there's big boxes of tapes over there like Dick has. And I started picking up some tapes, and I picked up a deal called Joe and Charlie's Big Book Comes Alive, and I picked up another set of tapes called Sister B's Promises. And I picked up another set of tapes from a gal named Dainey down in Louisiana. And I'm here to tell you that I feel like a newcomer in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am more excited today about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous than I have ever been. And I don't know that it's just because I have suited up and showed up one day at a time to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stayed sober long enough to finally know I don't know anything. And I don't know if that's what it is or not, but I feel so excited. And I'm listening to these tapes, and I don't know if you know this. I know y'all are much smarter than I am, so I'm sure you know this. But see, I thought the promises were on page 85 and 86 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought those were the promises. And I found out that there's 1,500 promises in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't even know that. And I'm learning all kinds of things about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know that story in the Big Book that they talk about from the captain's table to the steerage? I never ever knew what that was about. And now I know. And if you want to know, go home tonight and read it. It's great. You figure it out. Or else go over there with Dick. I'm sure he's got the tapes. And Joe and Charlie will explain it to you. But I never understood those things. And these are the, I'm just like, wow. And around where I go to meetings in Southern California, I've had names tacked to me like Big Book Thumper, Step Nazi, and you know, people start giving you those titles, and you think you know something. And I started listening to these tapes, and I found out I don't know nothing. And so now I'm back into the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know, you probably are not like this, but I'm one of those compulsive, obsessive alcoholics. And everybody in my family who's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous got the first 164 pages of the Big Book bound in leather with their name on it and Alcoholics Anonymous in gold. And it's great. It makes the book about that thick. And you can carry it in your suitcase or wherever you go. Because I just, you know, it was my hint. You got to listen to these tapes and start marking up your book. It's great. And it's just like I am so excited that I'm in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I feel like a newcomer. This is how I felt when I first got sober. It was like, wow. And that's the way I feel now, because I go to a book study, and I thought I understood the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know, maybe it's just, you know, I've got a new perspective tonight, and I'm just so grateful that I'm in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to this program, I didn't know anything about the God that I know today that was given to me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because besides being a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, I am a recovering Southern Baptist. And I had a lot of old ideas about God. And one of the things I'd also like to say is I'm not up here to knock churches. I'm also not up here to knock other 12-step programs. I certainly hope you have taught me better than that. I am just here to tell you my experience, strength, and hope. And sometimes, you know, my ego likes for you to laugh, so I'll say it so you'll laugh. But my intent is not to knock anything, because I know that church works just fine for my mother. And one of the things that I've learned since I've been in the program with Alcoholics Anonymous is that I have a disease of perception. And if you've never heard Clancy's tape, Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception, I highly encourage you to get that tape. Because I have learned that I have this disease and I just don't see things the way they really are. You know, what works for other people sometimes just doesn't work for me, because I don't see and hear the same things. I don't know what happens to information, but I'll have this set of information, it'll go through my head, comes back out, and it doesn't even resemble what went in. And that's the way my head processes. I just don't process things the way it really is. Because, you know, I am just, if I look around and I know that all of us have had childhood issues, because that's just life. I don't think you have to be an alcoholic to have those problems. But if there's anything that was ever wrong with what happened to me, was that I was just spoiled, rotten, and loved too much. And that's probably what happened to me. But whatever it was, when people were trying to love me and were trying to help me, it would go in through my head and come out, and somehow I felt like they were trying to hurt me. And that's the way I process things. And I know today that all anybody has ever done is to try to love me and to try to help me. But there was just something inside of me, and I just call it the disease of alcoholism because I don't know what else it is. But whenever anybody tried to do something good for me, I did the opposite. If they said go right, I went left. You know, if they said don't do it, I did it. You know, it was just those, I just had that kind of head. And when people start telling you all those thou shalt nots, and when they start, you know, those preachers were slamming those podiums, they were ringing out into the congregation things like, if you've thought it, you've done it. Well, if you're an alcoholic in the making and you think a lot, if you, you know, you just start copping the attitude, well, if I've already thought it, I just might as well do it. And that was the kind of head I had. And I still have that head today. And because I have a disease of perception, I need to keep coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I need you to help me stay in touch with reality, because my perception of reality is distorted. I just don't see things the way they really are. And I am so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that there are people who love me enough to tell me the truth. Now, I know that you've got people like that here in Kansas, you know, who walk up to you and tell you the truth whether you want to hear it or not. We have those people in California. I am so grateful that people love me enough to tell me the truth today, because I believe what Chuck Chamberlain said. He said, if I knew better, I'd do better. And if I knew I was doing it wrong, I wouldn't do it. It's because I don't know. And I need you to help me stay in touch with reality, because I'm really doing the best I can. But sometimes that's walking off in the weeds. And I need somebody to say, you know, come on back this way, you're going in the wrong direction. Thank God I've been around here long enough to know that people help me because they love me. And if it hadn't been for people like you and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd be dead somewhere off there in the weeds. Thank God people have grabbed me by the hand and jerked me back. And I am so grateful for that. And thank God for a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that today I can reach out for help, because I didn't used to know how to do that. I also believe that this God lived somewhere up in the sky, and that he wore white robes, and he had a long beard, and he had a clipboard. And he wasn't paying any attention to you. He was just watching me. So I should have known then I was an alcoholic in the making. You know, he was only watching me, selfish and self-centered. Today, the God, as I understand him, doesn't even resemble that God that I came into in the when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me where I can find God. And it says God is deep within. And it says how to find God. And it says to search fearlessly. I am so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because to my knowledge, God has not come down and shot me a message, or has not come up and shot me a message, or wherever it comes from. But what happens is that God speaks to me through people, and he speaks to me through the fellowship of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if it were not for you, I would not know what to do. I am so grateful to this program, because you have made God, as I understand him, real to me. I truly believe what Dr. Bob said, that this is a program that's a language of the heart. This is where the heart speaks and the heart listens. And I know for me that everything that has ever been good for me has come to me directly from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a God who just absolutely loves me to pieces. And he has a marvelous sense of humor. And I'd like to share that with you. My name is Polly. It's not Pauline or Paula, it's Polly. And if you're a little girl and your name's Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. It was things like Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. And I don't know about any of you, but I'm a real sensitive alcoholic. And I don't like to be teased, and I don't like to be laughed at. And I also, besides having this name I had as a little girl, I had zits all over my face, so people teased me about that. And today I have the opportunity to go into schools and to share our program with our young people and, you know, just to talk about the disease of alcoholism. And every time I go on a school grant, I always see where there's this group of kids and this other little kid over there. And, you know, this group of kids is, you know, doing na-na-na-na-na and teasing that one little kid. And just, you know, it just grabs my insides because I was always that other little kid. And I came to a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's okay to be the weirdo. Because, I mean, you know, it's like, it's so neat. You're the most gorgeous bunch of diseased people I've ever seen, you know, and it's like, that's the way I was. And it's like I always felt different, and I always felt like I didn't fit in. And, but I've learned in the program with Alcoholics Anonymous that there's just no negatives in God's world, that everything has a positive result. It's just that my perception of it is negative, but the result is always positive. And today I love having the name Polly, because you know there's just not very many Pollys in the program at Alcoholics Anonymous. And when anybody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. I didn't know I had a disease called alcoholism, but I knew that I was a drunk and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something, because I knew I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything that I am or hope to be, I owe to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. 11 and a half years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. I'm here to tell you, you're not going to walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. God has a dynamite sense of humor. We have a rule around here called Rule 62. Just don't take yourself so damn seriously. You know, no negatives in God's world. Here's this sensitive little kid who couldn't stand to be laughed and teased. Shoot. I can't open my mouth and give my name that people don't crack up. I am also living, breathing proof that you can have the disease of alcoholism and not come from alcoholic parents. In fact, my father died when he was 60 years old, and by God's grace, in this program, I was 2 years sober. And he had 60 years of sobriety. My mother is 75 years old today, and she has 75 years of sobriety. And you know, my mother is not the least bit impressed with my almost 15 years of sobriety. Her deal is, if you just wouldn't have drank, those things wouldn't have happened to you anyway. You know, I hear a lot of people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I certainly was one of them, that when I first came to this program, I used to whine and cry. Any whiners? I'm also a recovering whiner. I whined for years in this program, and still do. I whine on occasion. And I used to whine in this program, you know, that my mother or daddy has never seen me take a cake in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They just don't understand me, and they just don't want to, you know, because I wanted my parents to come see me take a cake, and I wanted them to meet you guys, and I wanted to show off the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, you know, that's never going to happen because my dad is dead, and, you know, I don't think my mother's going to ever see me take a cake in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I've always wanted people to understand me. And what you have taught me is that you have helped me understand that my mother doesn't understand. You know, my mother doesn't have this disease, and she doesn't need to understand me. But see, I've always wanted other people to understand me, and I'm so grateful that you have taught me to be understanding. Also, my mother lives in a little town in Texas about 40 miles north of Abilene, just where they took the Bible Belt and gave it an extra pull. And in this little town, my mother will say the same thing that she says to me every time she picks me up at the airport in Abilene. And she'll say, "Now, honey, you don't need to let anybody know you're an alcoholic." And you know what? We have a set of traditions. And I don't have the right to break my mother's anonymity. So, you know, I don't have to tell anybody that I'm an alcoholic. And I am so grateful because you have taught me that. And I am so grateful for that because that's a freedom today. And I don't have to carry around all that anger because you have shown me how to do it differently. When I came to the program at Alcoholics Anonymous, people started to talk about identify with the feelings. Because the way we drank are the things that separate us. But how we felt about our drinking are the things that make us alike. And they said, "Polly, identify with the feelings." And I began to listen to you talk about your alcoholic moms and your alcoholic dads. And I began to be able to identify with the feelings. Because you see, my dad was a very angry man. And he used to have fits of rage, just like a periodic alcoholic. And my mother and I never, ever knew when he would have one of these fits of anger. And we used to walk around on eggshells. And my mother used to say things like, "Polly, just be nice. If you'll just be nice, then Daddy won't have one of his fits." But you see, Daddy always had one of his fits. And when he had one of his fits, furniture would fly, and he would curse and yell, and he would knock my mother around. And I always felt like it had something to do with me. And I'd look at my dad, and I would say the same things about my dad that I've heard people say about their alcoholic dad, and I'd say, "There's no way I'll ever be like you." But the irony of it was, I became just like him, only worse. And I would look at my mom, and I would say, "You're such a wimp. You don't stand up for yourself. How do you let him treat you that way?" And the irony of it was, I became just like her. And what happened to me because of the kind of person I am is that these people were so good to me. My mother and dad would have done anything for me. And these were the things about them that I took on. It was just like whatever was negative was the things that I incorporated into my life. And why, I have absolutely no idea, except as far as I'm concerned, it's a disease called alcoholism. And I don't know the reasons why. And I once heard at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is something that came out of an old-timer's mouth, and I just love it. And he says, "If the donkey's in the ditch, let's don't ask why, let's just get him out." And that's the way I feel about my disease. I don't know why, I just need to treat and take care of the solution. I know what the problem is. The problem is an obsession to the mind and an allergy to the body. The solution is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and a spiritual awakening. And how I take care of that is by action, working the 12 steps. So those are the things. I don't know why, but I know what the solution is. I know today that I have a disease that's spiritual in nature. And I have a disease that requires a spiritual solution. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I suffer from a spiritual malady. It tells me that I am separated from the sunshine of the Spirit. And I know today that I have a disease and it's spiritual in nature. And it would not have mattered how much my parents loved me, how much they gave to me, how much they did for me. Because I suffer from a disease that's spiritual in nature, whatever they did would never have ever been enough. Thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I know that today. And for that, I am so grateful. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, I had married a man who was in SAC. And he not only was going to be gone, he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. And I know today, thanks to the fourth and fifth step of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have never, ever wanted to take responsibility for me. I have always wanted me to be your responsibility, never mine. And I didn't want to be responsible for myself. Also, when we went into the Air Force, I was introduced to alcohol. And I really had been brought up to believe that people who drank were bad. And these people drank, and these were not bad people. And one of the things that we still have a lot of friends, or I have, and my ex-husband have, a lot of friends in the program, not in the program, but that are in the Air Force. And I'm here to tell you that of all those people that I know, I am the only person that's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am the only one that needs it. So, I mean, there were people who drank, and they are not alcoholic. So the Air Force was not full of alcoholics. There are people who drink and they don't do the same things that I did. And they drank a lot at times. And today, I have a better understanding of what a real alcoholic is. And by God's grace and this program, I truly know that I am a real alcoholic. One of the things that we were talking about at dinner is I am so grateful that I don't have to question that. I know that there are people that do because they just didn't ride, you know, it all the way to the bottom. But I did, and I don't have any doubts in my mind. In fact, one of the ladies that I sponsor was over at our house the other night, and she was saying, well, you know, sometimes I still wrestle with that, whether or not I'm a real alcoholic. And I said, oh, I'm so grateful I don't have to worry about that because I really do know that I am. And my oldest son was sitting there and said, no shit. So it's no doubt in his mind either. At any rate, but I was introduced to alcohol in the Air Force, and I never progressed to the morning drink. I just started with the morning drink, and it was like they had these little coffees, and maybe Sterling is in the Air Force. When he talks tonight, I don't know if it's still that way because I've been away from it a long time, but they used to have these coffees in the Air Force that they served more than coffee. It was Bloody Marys and screwdrivers. So in the morning, it was Bloody Marys and screwdrivers and sherry before lunch and martinis before dinner and Black Russians and Stingers after. And it never, ever occurred to me that there was anything wrong with the way I drank. And for a very, very long time, it worked. And it was a lot of fun. Along about 1962, we got stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And this is a place, if you've got two little kids, which I had, you do not send kids out to play if it's winter. I had no tools in which to be a parent. You see, my father was a man who had a lot of anger and rage, and so did I. And I was one of these people that had all this anger and rage down inside of me. And what I would do is I would, to the rest of the world, I was just so nice. You know, it was just like, you know, I would just smile and just be so nice and do anything you wanted me to do. And then I would go home and I would take my anger out on my two little boys. And here I had these two little boys with no tools in which to be a parent. I absolutely did not know how to be a parent. And these two little boys were driving me crazy. And I was having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. So I went to an Air Force doctor, and he said, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimitol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic because I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just lay there and watch soap operas and listen to Joan Baez sing the blues. Any of y'all who are my age know Joan Baez? I don't know if any of you have had to do any controlled drinking, but I'm here to tell you that if you're an officer's wife, it's not appropriate behavior to be drunk and disorderly. You are not to do things to upset the jock and put any kind of fraction on his career, or infraction, I think is the word, on his career. And I'm Southern born and raised, in case you missed the accent. And in my family, it wasn't about how you felt. It was about what do the neighbors think. So I knew how to look good. And I knew how to act differently than I felt. And I didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism. But I did know that when I drank too much, things happened to me. And I couldn't remember what I did. And I couldn't remember how much I had drank. So I knew that when I went out to a party, that I couldn't drink much. So I would take a drink, and I would sip it all night long. And I'll tell you right now, that still makes the hairs on my neck stand up. Because I'm here to tell you that a four-hour party can be a lifetime. I couldn't wait till I got home and could drink all I want and pass out. I'd also taken drinking things like NyQuil cough medicine, vanilla extract, and Scope, because I had this keen alcoholic thinking, and I thought if you couldn't smell me, then you couldn't tell I'd been drinking. I don't know what I thought about behavior, but I thought it had all to do with smell. And so anyway, one night, I was passed out on my sofa. If it was 9 o'clock at night, I was always passed out on my sofa. And my husband jerked me up and he set me at the kitchen table. And he said, alcohol and pills are our problem. And if you just didn't drink and if you just didn't take these pills, everything would be okay. And he started pouring out the booze and he started throwing the pills down the garbage disposal. And I just sort of sat there in my comatose state. And when he was done, I went and passed out on the sofa. Now, my disease had progressed to where I ceased to wake up and go to sleep. I passed out and came to. And I came to that morning about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was really sick. I was always sick when I came to because I was very physically addicted to alcohol. And I didn't know if I could get in my car and drive to the 7-Eleven and get a bottle of NyQuil. And I found myself that night crawling around my garage floor, going through those plastic bags, turning up those bottles to get one drop. I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. And I absolutely had to have a drink of alcohol. And that night, my husband caught me downing a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I absolutely had to drink to live. Shortly thereafter, I had an automobile accident, and I totaled a car in Irving, Texas. And because I'm a blackout drinker, to just make a very long story short, I called the police, and I told them that my car had been stolen. And here comes my husband and the police, and they take me back to the Irving police station. And I got to see that look on the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. Because this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he says, why don't you just take her home and sober her up? And on the way home, my husband said, Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from my house, and I wish you would go there. And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. And this was a county detox. It was a 7-day detox. And they took us to a lot of AA meetings, And I love the people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I had this kind of arrogance down inside of me that just said, Polly, people like you just don't become alcoholic. And while I was in this treatment center, I had what we call in Texas a jitterhouse romance, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. Well, we did that. for 58 days. And I was 12 steps out of a motel in Euless, Texas. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. I cannot live sober with the feelings about myself. I can't stand the kind of mom I've become, and the kind of wife I've become, and the kind of daughter I've become. And I've heard in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that men hate what they've done, and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I knew that there was absolutely no way I could live sober. I could not stand to live inside my own skin. And when that 7 days was up, I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel. I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an Eskimo in your life. And an Eskimo is someone who leads us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe it's a spouse that just says, I can't live with your drinking anymore. Or it's parents who tell a child, you can't live here anymore because of what your disease is doing to us. Or maybe you're here because you got a nudge from the judge. Or maybe you're here because your employer says, if you don't get your act together, you can't work here any longer. Or maybe you've just watched somebody with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous carved in their life, and you want what they have. But somehow, some way, someone leads us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life. And she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And today, I know what that something was. That something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way. It was on a half latch. And she pushed that door open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Needless to say, that didn't take because I'm standing here tonight. But I need to tell you about the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know how we go to the meeting after the meeting and everybody tells there, can you top this story? Well, I wasn't divorced. I came here married. I'd never been fired. I didn't have a DUI. I did all my affairs sober. So I didn't have one of those, can you top this story? So my can you top this story was, I was pronounced dead on arrival. And I felt absolutely nothing. I am a very, very slow learner in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This program has not come easy for me. I am a person who just didn't get it right away. And I used to hear people talk about God of their understanding, and they would sit in meetings, and they would tell me how that felt. And I just couldn't get it. And I started to do some things in this program, and I hit a bottom that was every bit as devastating as the bottom I had hit behind alcohol and drugs, and that was behind relationships and sex. I just was so desperate for somebody to love me. Because you see, in and of myself, I was nothing. Absolutely nothing. I needed you to validate my very existence. And I knew that if you just tell me enough that you love me, or that you would just show me that you love me, that I would be okay. And thank God for people in this program who loved me and said, Polly, just keep coming back, because there is absolutely no way that any of us can give this to you. This is going to have to come from a power greater than yourself, and you're going to have to heal from the inside out. But just keep coming back. And I used to walk around these rooms, and I would talk the talk, but I couldn't walk the walk. And I had these fears going on inside of me that you were going to find me out. And the fear was that you're going to find out that I don't have a higher power. But the worst fear was is that you have a higher power, and I'll never find one.
You know, it took me a long time to share that. I was almost 12 years sober before I could share that. Because I was so ashamed. Because I had felt like I was such a fraud in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know, I have learned in this program that I am not unique, I am typical. And if I am a person who sat in meetings for a very long time and I couldn't find a power greater than myself, then there are other people who do that too. And I just want to say to you what was said to me. Because people didn't know when they were saying to me, just keep coming back. Just suit up and show up. Because that's what I did. For over 5.5 years, I suited up and I showed up. And somewhere along about 5.5 years of sobriety, I was sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a wonderful feeling came over me. And that feeling was, everything's going to be okay. And you know, if you're one of those people that's sitting here tonight, I understand how you feel. And I just want to say, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Because if you just keep coming back, it will happen to you. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous promises that it will happen to you. Because in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, on the page at this, after the ninth step in those, in that set of promises, it says that all of these promises are being fulfilled. Some of them faster, some of them slower, but they will all materialize if we work for them. So please, please, just keep coming back. I ended up in the treatment center in Dallas, Texas on April the 11th of 1977, and I was court committed to that treatment center. And I am so grateful to my ex-husband and to a Fort Worth judge, because I was court committed to that treatment center, and my papers read that I was a detriment to myself and others. Because on April the 11th of 1977, I stepped off the elevator at Center Hospital, and this beautiful man greeted me, and he put his arms around me, and he said, "Polly, come on in, because we're going to love you sober." And that's what you have been doing for almost 15 years, is loving me sober. And sometimes it's been gentle, and sometimes it's been tough. But that's what you have done, is to love me sober. And I have truly, truly felt the love. And for a lot of years now, I've known it was love. And I'm so grateful for that. When I got here, I was told to do a lot of things, and those things I didn't want to do. Because I told you I'm a recovering whiner. And I did. I used to walk around these rooms and I'd whine. And my biggest whine was, nobody understands me. I was the most misunderstood person in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys just wouldn't listen. And I was told to get into the 12 and 12 and to burn the 11th step prayer in my brain, because it had absolutely nothing to do with being understood. It had only to do that I be understanding. And it had nothing to do that I be forgiven, only that I be forgiving. And it had nothing to do that I be loved, only that I be loving. And you know, I think that's what drives psychiatrists and psychologists crazy about you and me. Because, you know, they're always saying, you know, do it for yourself. I can't do anything for myself. The best I could do got me here. That's the very best I could do. And I also hear things in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you deserve it. Boy, I'm telling you, I hope you're not next to me if I get what I deserve. You know, I am so grateful that my higher power is a God of mercy and not a God of justice. Because, you know, I have gotten so much more than I ever, ever deserved. You know, I've had to swallow some bitter truths about myself. And probably the most bitter truth that I have had to swallow about myself is that I am a child abuser. I have had to look at myself and see that about me. And you know, people like me shouldn't be able to walk around with people like you. But because of a loving, merciful God, I have gotten so much more than I ever deserved. I was also told to talk with other alcoholics, and that if I had 30 minutes more than that alcoholic, to share my experience and strength with that alcoholic. And I didn't want to do that because I didn't think that I had anything to share. But I was told to do it anyway. And I am so grateful today because, you see, in my alcoholic arrogance, I thought I was going to share my alcoholism with you to get you sober. I didn't know that I'm to share my experience, strength, and hope with you so I get to stay sober. I never ever understood that you have to give it away in order to get it back. I just didn't understand those kind of things. Because you see, I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my disease. And I was always waiting for you to do it for me. If you'll just give it to me, I'll get better. I didn't know that the only way I was going to ever get better was to give it to you. And the more I gave it to you, the better that I get. And I never, ever understood that. And you know, I've heard a lot of people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous say, well, if such and such wants the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, they'll call. Well, you know something, my friend? I am forever grateful that Bill didn't wait for Bob to call. Because, you know, if he had, none of us would be sitting here tonight. Bill made 10 phone calls to just talk to another alcoholic. And I hope that I never, ever get too sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to call a newcomer and invite somebody to a meeting and start picking them up. Because, you know, they're probably just as scared as I was. I was terrified to call people. Nobody has time for me. I didn't understand that if I reach out and help you, that I'm helping you stay sober if you carry me to a meeting. I didn't understand that. Because, you see, my kind of self-worth said, there's no way that somebody like you has time for somebody like me. And today, I call newcomers. When there's a newcomer in our meeting, I call and see if I can bring them to a meeting. And I hope and pray I never get too sober to do that. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a victim. I was a victim because I was an only child. And you see, I thought there was something about being an only child because, you see, people would tell me, you know, Polly, you're spoiled because you're an only child. Well, it's true, I was. And I was a victim because of the U.S. Air Force, and I was a victim because of the Baptist Church. And it just seemed like I was a victim. I was even a victim because I was born a woman. I thought men had it better. And I was just a victim. And I'm so grateful to a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, because in that book, it says that most of my problems are of my own making. And I'm here to tell you folks, that's the good news. Because if my problems are of anybody else's making, I'm screwed. Because, you know, I can't change people, places, and things. The only thing that I can change is my attitude about people, places, and things. And I'm so grateful today that I know that. It's all about my perception. And I am so grateful today that I know that I am not a victim. And that whatever I do, I have a choice. I am so grateful. And you know, I hear people talk about the way they, you know, about having slips and getting drunk. I don't know. I guess somebody knocked them down and poured booze down them. I don't know how you do that. Because I've always heard that it takes drinking thinking before you do any drinking. And I know that the way that I keep from having drinking thinking is that I keep showing up from meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have had so many blessings in this program. I have been so, so blessed. When I was 3 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I divorced. And I had been married for 22 years. And, you know, I'd had that good Southern upbringing, you know, if you made your bed, you lay in it. And all that good stuff we hear about, and divorce was something that you just don't do absolutely ever. And my husband had been retired from the Air Force with congestive heart failure. And I absolutely knew this man needed me in order to survive. You know, he would die without me because I was taking care of him. And again, you know how these people in Alcoholics Anonymous get right in your face and they tell you the truth whether you want to hear it or not. And people in my group would say things to me like, Polly, your husband is not dying from congestive heart failure. You are. Why don't you just drop the rock? And he and I divorced when I was 3 years sober. And I want to tell you how important I am in this man's life. 6 months later, he remarried. A much younger woman. And he's never been healthier or happier since. And you know, I learned a lesson in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I learned he had a higher power and it wasn't me. And I've learned that a lot. You know, that the women I work with in this program, my children, they all have a higher power and it's not me. And you know, I don't know about your alcoholic arrogance, but sometimes that's real hard for me to swallow. Because I just know that you couldn't make it without me. But I also know, on the other hand, that we all make a difference. And that everybody in this room makes a difference. And that whatever you're doing with your life tonight makes a difference. Because I was told, you never know who's watching. You know, it's real easy for me to come into rooms like this and go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's really easy for me to look wonderful. When it really comes push to shove is when I walk outside of these doors and practice these principles in all my affairs. That's when the tough job. And I know today that we all make a difference and that each and every one of us has something to do. And I don't know what it is. For me, I believe for me it's just suiting up and showing up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's my primary purpose, to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I believe that's why I've been given this gift. When I was 3.5 years sober, I married my best friend. I had known Dave since I was 6 months sober, and Dave knew all about me. And Dave has been my greatest gift in love, because Dave said to me, Polly, I love you. But you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you. And you know, things like that aren't supposed to happen to people like me. And I am so grateful to Dave. And Dave just loves me no matter what. And Dave and I are real different. And in fact, she gave him a magazine tonight, and it's one of y'all's little mountains or rocks. And Dave's a rock climber, and she said to send that to Dave and tell him to come to Kansas and to climb that. So, because Dave is one of these guys that's throwing ropes up on rocks in the high Sierras. And he likes to walk around on top of mountains with 40-pound packs on his back and climb up ropes. And, you know, that kind of thing just doesn't, you know, that just doesn't pull my chain. I just keep thinking, you know, you break your fingernails or you're going to skin your knee, and it just doesn't sound like any fun to me at all. And I'm one of these people that just loves to be active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just, you know, I'm on a lot of committees and I do a lot of service in this program, and it just excites me. And I'm on the phone all the time, and Dave's just kind of one of these kind of quiet, steady guys. And, you know, I need that. He's my stabilizer. He's there. And he's my rock. And he's taught me so much about love. Because Dave has taken a lot of abuse from me. Because I was just so terrified. And I just didn't know anything about love. And I just didn't know anything about trust. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that love is a healer. And wherever love is present, character defects are healed. And I've had a lot of real icky character defects to surface in this marriage. And probably the worst character defect of all is the character defect of jealousy. Because, you see, if I think Dave is the greatest guy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think all the other women think so, too. And I'm here to tell you that I am blessed in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to sponsor the most beautiful women. And they're all younger than me. And the worst thing is they're all thinner than me. And they adore Dave, and he adores them. And I had a lot of problems with that. And you see, today I know that that's just my own insecurities. Because it has nothing to do with Dave, and it has nothing to do with those beautiful women. It has only to do with my relationship with God. And when I have those icky feelings come over me, whatever the situation is, I know that it has nothing to do with people, places, or things. It has only to do with my relationship with God. And I'm so grateful today I know that, because I was always looking for it somewhere else. And I'm so grateful today that you have taught me that. That if it's a problem, it's me. In the 12 and 12, it said it's a spiritual axiom. When anything disturbs me, it's me, no exception. And today I know that. I want to tell you a little bit about my two sons. When I came to the program with Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know if I could stay sober because of the trauma that had happened to my two sons. You know, I believe with all my heart that the disease of alcoholism is a family disease, and that this disease affects people who do not drink, and that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. I truly believe that today with all my heart, and that I believe that anybody who is affected by the disease of alcoholism has a right to get better. I didn't realize that my 14-year-old son was a drug addict. And when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and sobered up, I could see that my son was a full-blown drug addict. And I used to walk around rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just didn't understand it. You know, how can these things be happening to James? I'm sober now. And it was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that people said to me, "Polly, you just suit up and show up, because you may be the only big book James ever reads." And Russ is one of our Al-Anons. And Russ was the one who took care of me. Russ was the one who put me to bed at night. Russ was the one who called work. And you know, I don't know when's the last time you've seen a passed out drunk, but we don't breathe too good. And many is the time I've come to with this child screaming, "Mom, wake up, are you dead?" And me to come to and see the fear in his eyes. And you know, for the past almost 15 years, I haven't had to come to and see that kind of fear in anybody's eyes because of something I'm doing. And for that, I've been overpaid in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, what would a good Al-Anon do if their alcoholic sobered up? But go marry a practicing alcoholic. And she sobered up. And one more time, Russ didn't have a purpose for living. And my daughter-in-law is calling me on the phone, and she's telling me that my son has cut off his wrist and he's taken a bottle of sleeping pills. And you know, I wanted to get on the next thing smoking to Texas and rescue my son, because by then Dave and I were living in California. And again, it was folks like you that said, "Polly, you just suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and you let God take care of Russ." Well, God has taken Russ on a mighty path. And he is now divorcing the lady in Texas, and he's married to another young lady. And some really wonderful things have happened around that situation. But I just nearly died in this program. And it was because of him that I found the rooms of Al-Anon. Because you see, Russ tried to kill himself many times in this program. Not in this program, that he tried to kill himself while I was in this program. And you know, it's like as many times as I would go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew God could help me stay sober. But I truly did not believe that God would take care of Russ. I was just terrified that God wasn't going to take care of Russ. I just didn't know how to let go. I just didn't know how to do it. And I was invited to talk out of town, and my daughter-in-law called me while I was out of town, and she told me that my son was in the hospital because he had put a scissors in his stomach. And you know, I just didn't believe I could stand it. And I was so devastated that day when I talked. And after I finished talking, this man came up to me and he said, "Polly, you and I need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't. And he is either all things or he's nothing. And that Russ is God's kid. And what God does with his kids is none of your business." And by God's grace and this help, I was able to release my son. That was 3 years ago, November, and Russ has not tried to take his life again. A wonderful miracle happened in our house. Thanksgiving, my son called and said that he was moving to California. And he and I have had an opportunity to do a lot of growing and a lot of healing together. And I am so grateful for that. And Russ is going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous with Dave and I, and he's going to meetings of Al-Anon. And it's so wonderful to have him. He just lives 10 minutes from us. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had this dream that I kept dreaming because James lives in Chicago, and Russ and Cheryl lived in New Jersey, and I kept saying, "I just want to get my family together." And Russ and Cheryl loved Chicago, and I said, "Dave, let's move to Chicago." And poor Dave was just having tachycardia because he kept saying, "There's no mountains in Chicago, and it's really cold there." But bless his heart, I know he would have gone. But we didn't have to go because here comes Russ to Los Angeles, and my youngest son is looking into a job in San Francisco. So, you know, God is working, and I don't even have, you know, it's like if I'll just let God be in charge of the universe. I have this thing on my desk at work, and it says, "Dear Polly, I don't need your help today. Thank you, God." You know, I always think I have something to do with it. And if I just let it alone, it all takes care of itself. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone and he said, "Mom, I want what you have." And 6.5 years before, he hadn't wanted what I had. 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he said, "Don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you." And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And James is now a member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And on January the 3rd, he celebrated 8 years in this fellowship. And I am so grateful. Thanks. We've got to do a lot of fun things together. As a recovering family, we got to go to Seattle and celebrate Bill W.'s big family reunion there as a family. And James and Kelly has met Dave and I if we get invited out of town lots of times when we are invited to share. And we've gotten to do a lot of special things because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But a real, real special event happened in our house on April the 27th. And what happened was is Dave and I got to go to Chicago, and Rush and Cheryl came, and my mother came from Texas, and my ex-husband and his wife, and you guys taught me how to act, so I was really nice. And we all got to watch James and Kelly get married. And see, what we do out in California is we have what's called an AA wedding. And everybody gets to share at the wedding, and you wish your good, you know, all the people in AA get to share to the couple who are getting married. And they'd never seen that in Chicago. And we all got to share at James and Kelly's wedding. And as I stood there, and I felt the power, and I saw what had happened to my life, I knew that the reason that that miracle was taking place, because you see, Kelly is a member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous too, is that the only reason that that miracle was happening that day was because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I nearly died and missed the whole thing. If you'd have told me to make a list of all the things that I wanted in sobriety, I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that He's given me. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me a husband like Dave, friends like I have. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me all the gifts that I have received in sobriety. But see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to me, I would have settled for so much less. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. The very best that I could do for me was to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have breathed life into me. And tonight, I am all the things I ever wanted to be. I am tonight the woman that I have always wanted to be. Tonight, I am self-supporting through my own contributions. And I never, ever knew I could do that. Tonight, I am faithful and true to one man for 11 and a half years, and I never ever knew I could do that. Tonight I am a good employee. I give my employer 100%, and you taught me how to do that here. Here you taught me how to be a friend, and you taught me about commitment. And you know, if you've ever wanted to know what freedom is, get committed. The more committed you are, the freer you are. And I never understood that. But the greatest gift that you have given me in sobriety is that tonight I am so grateful that I am the mom I have always wanted to be. I was never able to listen to my children when they were little. But thanks to this program, you have taught me how to just be still and listen. And I am so grateful that today I can hear and I can be the mom I always wanted to be. And Russ said the other day to me, he says, Mom, you are the very best mom in the whole world. And you know, without you, I wouldn't have that. I am so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and to all the gifts that I have received in this program. The miracle. So if you're new, please, please keep coming back. When I got sober, one of the people used to say a prayer. And I end my AA talks with this prayer because it's what the program means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. Thank you.
All right.